This is an interview with Robert Dinwiddie for the California State College Bakersfield, California Odyssey Project by Stacy Jagels at 834 West Goshen Avenue, Visalia, California, on Wednesday, February 18, 1981 at 10:30 a.m.
I thought we'd start first with when and where you were born.
I was born on the 7th of February and a little town of Wiley, Texas.
Could you tell me a little bit about your parents? Were they born also in Texas?
No, my parents was born in Tennessee.
Both of them were born in Tennessee?
Well, as far as I can remember, they were. In Memphis, I think they were born in Memphis, Tennessee. They came from Tennessee as long as I've known them. That was their home. And my father was, quite a musician in all of his children but me, except I, and he had seven children.
Do you know why your parents moved from Tennessee to Texas?
Yes, I think I do. I think they did that because they heard that they could buy land for $8 an acre in Texas, where the Tennessee and all back in there was done settled up. And there was a real large family of them. And the reason why I know that, they were both school teachers. So all through the generations, Uncle Irvin and Aunt Susie, the both of them were school teachers.
Not your parents then, but your aunt and uncle were school teachers?
Pardon?
Who were the school teachers?
Uncle Irvin and Aunt Susie.
Oh, but your parents were farmers then?
Yes.
They wanted to come to Texas to find land.
Yes, that's what they wanted to do, but my mother wouldn't move out to Texas because she said it's too thinly settled. Not right then. So that's the reason they never did own no land, I guess. And she said she wasn't going to move out where she didn't have no friends or anything, you know. And I was so small, I can't remember very much about. I can't give you much details on them because I was too small.
Mm-hmm. And they never owned land then? They would rent land or do sharecropping or something?
I think the way they rented land in them days, that the renter, say I was a renter and you was the owner, well, I'd give you every third bale as your rent, as your pay, as we harvested our crops. The landlord, he just got his share when we gathered the crops, and according to how much crops were made, is how much he made and how much we made had left over.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all of those things that I went through with then, I was so small I can't remember many details of it.
Did you say there were seven children in your family?
Yes, there were.
And were you the oldest or near the oldest?
Oh, no, I wasn't the oldest. I was, John and Maddie. John and Maddie. Seemed like, I started to say Clarence, but Clarence wasn't the next one. John and Maddie, I guess, was the two oldest ones. John was the oldest, and Maddie was the...
Uh-huh. So you were third down the line?
Yes. Uh-huh. That would have made me come in third.
Do you remember helping your father work on whatever farm you were living on at the time?
Oh, yes. I remember helping him all the time. It happened the time I was about 7 years old.
Did you have chores that you were assigned to do every day, like milk the cows or...
No, I never did that. Yeah, we had cows, but the mother, I believe it was, done with the milking of the cows. And when I got big enough and old enough to do it, we had 640 acres in our pasture. And it was cut in two divisions. One was a smaller pasture where we kept the work stock, and the surplus ones was on the bigger ones. And there was a river run through our part of the country called the Clear Fork. But I went back there years later after I got grown and married, and I told my wife, I said, I'm going to show you one of the most beautiful rivers you ever saw. And so I went back there, and he'd had siphon mud and stuff into the river till you could step across it. Filled up that much.
Lot then, huh?
Oh, yes, it changed a lot.
As you were growing up in Texas, do you remember all the homes you lived in? Did you live in several different homes, or did you grow up mostly in one place?
No, we lived in... the first one I can remember was... let's see, which place was it? The first one I can remember was a Haley and Brown, I believe it was, on the land that we was renting.
Uh-huh.
And back in them days, everybody went fishing around the 4th of July. That was when the farmers usually taking their vacation. There'd be 7 or 8 families. They'd take their vacation together at the same time. And we had boats, and we had seines in them days. I guess you know what a seine is, or do you?
Why don't you tell me about it?
Well, a seine is a bunch of cords netted together, made into a seine. You could make them as long as you wanted them. This one we had, I think, was 100-some-odd feet long. And you'd across the bottom, it'd have a bunch of... to hold it on the bottom of the ground, of the lake or whatever we was fishing in. There was a ball of lead about like that, I guess. They'd weigh about maybe 2 pounds or something like that, 2 or 3 pounds each, those leads would. And they'd hold the seine at the bottom down there, and the seine would be 6 or 7 feet up. So the seine would be up to the top of the water, and the bottom of it would be down at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd drag it, say, as far as from here across the street, And then one end of the same would be stuck in the ground up here, and the other one, you'd circle around in a circle and put it over there, you see. And then there'd be anywhere from 3 to sometimes as high as 4 or 5 inside of the seine. And they're fishing with their hands. And they'd catch the fish with their hands and put them in the boat and send them back to the headquarters of where we were at.
Did you fish a lot?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, we fished quite a bit in them days.
Did you bring the fish home for meal?
Oh, yes, we'd bring fish home for meal, but we'd have what was called a fish fry on the bank of the river.
Mm-hmm.
Some pick some good shady place, and where the water was shallow, where you could come on a boat, you know, and then you could wade out with whatever you had in your boat, in your seine. And they'd take them out, and the women would, I guess the women out, I don't know about this. Well, they kept a man or two there to clean the fish, you know, and dress them and get them ready for frying.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd spend about 3 or 4 days on the river, when we'd call it a fish fry.
So this was like a vacation time.
That's right. That'd come along in July.
Mm-hmm.
In July, the farmers had their crops all laid by July the 4th, or the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell me something about the house you lived in? Or any of the houses you've lived in? Do you remember what they were like there?
Well, I certainly do. Because I remember laying in the bed a lot of mornings and raking the snow off my bed. I still remember that when I was a boy. At the houses, the stations on your doors here, they was nailed there and they stuck out inside of the house. They wasn't closed up on the inside, you know.
So they're kind of primitive houses?
Oh, they were just crummy as could be. Just like sleeping outdoors, almost. But
So then you probably had an outdoor toilet?
Pardon?
An outdoor toilet?
No, we didn't have no outdoor toilets then at all. We just dig a hole about, I guess 5 or 6 foot deep. And then we'd build a top over it and cut the holes and things where you'd sit on that, on a solid board with just the holes cut out in it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it'd be almost as far as from here across the street from the house, away from the house, in the direction as far away as they could get it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to get up and walk clear down there to use the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And the little children, a small one, until they got big enough, used what they called in them days. I don't know what they don't guess they got any at all now. They called them chambers, I think, is what they called them.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And
how about the other things that you would need in the house, like the stove?
Well, we used heating stoves in our house, and most of the other people did too. Some used different kinds. One kind, there was about 2 kinds that I can remember. And the ones that we had, the stove was about, I don't know, well, it was just twice as long as that. It might not have been quite that long. And it was made out of solid iron.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one, the other type they had, stood on four legs, and it sort of way, well, he stood away, it was as tall as you are if you're standing up. And it was big in the middle. And you could put your wooden stuff in there. And the ladies had a cook stove set up on four legs about the, well, about where your knees would come to, I'd say. And then it had a hearth on it that they could break ashes out from under the grate that is in the kitchen stove. And then we'd catch them on the, in a, some kind of contraption that they had. I can't remember much about what they looked like, but they was it was real thick and stood up just about where, even with the woman's knees, and she could lay her ashes out there, you know, on the hearth.
Yeah. How many rooms did this house have, the one you're thinking of?
I think we lived in two or three different houses, a different, you know, maybe we'd rent a place for a year, mm-hmm. and then move on to another. And there sometimes we'd stay there the longest I can remember us just moving and staying in the same house was after I got quite a bit larger. And it was, seemed to me like it was just a two-bedroom, or I believe it was just a two-bedroom, unless you made a pallet. We sometimes made pallets if we had company. Well, we had it where we could spread some quilt or something down on the floor. They didn't have no rugs or nothing on the floors. Uh-huh. And spread that down there, and everybody that I knew had what we call a cellar, and the cellar was made to go in when it comes storms and things, you know, for protection, because you could pretty near push the houses over there so crummy, and had paper stuck in behind you know, where your door seals come out. Well, we'd punch paper behind that to keep the wind and stuff in. Uh-huh. And everywhere you moved, well, you'd have to change that. And everybody, all of our neighbors, as I can remember the names of, or can remember the names of a few of them, I mean, they were...
Everybody else was in the same situation?
Huh?
Everyone else was in the same situation?
That's right. That's right. But where we lived, it was quite hilly. And my father and mother, we lived on a place that never did, when it come rains, we had, they called them water spouts in them days. We had 23 inches of rain fall in 4 or 6 hours, I forget which it was, at one time. And we was up on a hill with our house, and we was the only one in close to us. It'd be about a mile to another house. Houses wasn't close together them days. But the same kin folks would have their houses as close as they could get them to their brothers, and they'd get them up as high as they could.
So then you moved several times as a child. You lived in several
places. Oh, yes, yes. So we moved a lot of time.
Did your father... move to try to get a larger farm, more land to work, or was he...
Well, I had a peculiar family. You know, well, I'm trying to think of words to use to make it where you could understand it. My mother, she was a coward to stay by herself, in other words. Uh-huh. And she wanted somebody in the house with her, wherever she lived. She wanted somebody, so we kept a hard hand all the time. And we kept one, I say we kept sometime, we kept three or four. But going back as far as I can remember, we had a man that was, his name was Jim Cook. Uh-huh. And when he was a baby, so they tell me, and of course he has told me too the same thing. Now I've got a short thumb, see. Mr. Cook, when he was a baby, 12 months out of the year, he lived with us, in the house with us.
And he was your hired hand?
Yes, he was.
To help your father?
Yes. He just had one hand and a finger like this. He was left-handed like I am. See, I got this thing cut off a long time ago in the railroad. I used to be working for the railroad company, and I got that cut off. And it's a kind of a story in itself to tell you how I done it and all. But if you got the time, I can tell you. But it'd take you a little while to do it.
Well, why don't we come back to that a little bit later?
Huh?
Why don't we come back to that a little bit later? I wanted to ask you a little bit more about Mr. Cook. So your father was doing well enough that he was able to hire Mr. Cook and maybe a few other people during harvest time?
Oh, yes. We raised broom corn and all that kind of stuff. Mr. Cook, how he got in the family, when he was a tiny baby, why, Aunt Marthy, my grandmother, she come in to enter the family. That's back before, you're going back now before the Civil War. Is that what you wanting to hear back in that day and age?
Well, that's okay. Why don't we concentrate more on when you were a kid?
Well, this is when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, now, your father would hire people to help, like Mr. Cook, but did all the children still help out, too?
Oh, no, most of them when they got big enough to go to school. Let's see, John and Maddie. Who's,
so most of them were in school and probably only helped after school?
That's right, after school and on holidays.
How about your education? How far did you go in school?
Well, sir, I really got an education. I got to eighth grade.
And after the eighth grade, did you help your father work on the farm?
Up until I got married, I did. Then we just farmed cotton and sorghum cane to make syrup out of, and sugar cane and stuff like that. That was a kind of, we made our own syrups and stuff like that.
Did you have a garden?
Oh.
Or vegetables?
We had a garden, you can say that. My dad was a gardener from way out yonder. Sometimes you have 4 or 5 acres in garden.
How about animals? Do you remember the kinds of animals you had?
Yes. from we live close to right between right where two ranches come together, way down here. And between them, this one over here handled mules, and this one over here handled the horses. And you could get either one of them you wanted to work for their food for a year. And then they could sell them for a broke horse or a team, horses or mules, whichever. Mac Merchants was the horses. And the Morrison Ranch, I believe it was, didn't handle nothing but mules.
So you could use those animals.
Like we could use them and then work them for a year and make a crop with them.
Uh-huh.
And then the owners could take them and sell them as a well-broke team.
Oh, I see. And you say you had a few cattle? You had some cattle there?
Oh, yes, we always had cattle. Now, the cattle, of course, we owned ourselves.
How about pigs?
What?
Pigs.
Pigs?
Yeah.
Well, everybody had pigs in there.
And chickens, too?
Well, we had way over 300.
Chickens,
yeah.
Oh, boy.
And that was part of your, of your spending money. Sometimes you could get 15, 20 cents a dozen for the eggs.
Do you remember always having enough food to eat, even during the Depression?
I never heard of a Depression. When I was a boy growing up, I didn't know there was anything in the world except Depression. And we had in our town, Abilene, Texas. In our town, we had one sheriff, and he rode a horseback, and he dried till the sun got nearly down, and wherever, whosoever house he was close to, well, he'd just ride in, put his horse in there, and throw him some feed and go in the house and tell him who he was. He was Sheriff Peavy. And he'd taken care of the whole situation by himself, except after a long time, I got big enough then that they did put on an extra man. They put on a man at the jailhouse and taken in the prisoners. The sheriff would send them in.
You said before that you always had enough food to eat, and yet you described the houses you lived in as really crummy.
Well, they just barely fit into it. They wouldn't use them in a pig pen nowadays.
Well, can you tell me, do you know if your father ever had any extra money left over after your living expenses? Did you ever
yes.
have money to do things?
Yeah, buy our clothes and all. We wore good clothes. Because it is all made out of cotton, and cotton is warm. And we'd have summer clothes, just like you do now. And then in the winter, we'd have heavier clothes, and they were all good and warm. But our houses was no good.
Do you know why they didn't build better houses?
They didn't know how. And if you had chickens, if you had geese or ducks, that your houses were always built way up high. off of that high at least from here to down to the floor. And your ducks and your geese and the ones that you made your feather beds and things out of, they all roosted under the house. They had a place there where they could, with a big opening there, where they could go under the house. Mm-hmm. And they'd go under the house at night.
Mm-hmm. You said you worked for your father until you got married. How old were you when you got married?
19. Mm-hmm. I guess I was 20 when I got married. I married a girl who was 16, and we lived together till she got killed in a car accident. We lived together 50-something, we celebrated our 50th wedding anniversary, and in like 5 days of living together, 51 years before she passed away. Huh?
What town? What town did you live in when you...
The town that we patronized, Abilene, Texas.
That's where you lived when you got married?
Yes, ma'am. That's where I was living when I got married.
And what did you do for a living?
Pick cotton. Took $15 and bought me a four burner oil stove. And one little rocker and two or three little cane bottom chairs to sit in. And we'd lean them back against the wall like this, you know, and cross our legs and talk to people when they come in. And then, just work in the cotton fields and pick cotton for our winter supply of money. Plus, my dad and them made a play in the music. My dad was an excellent musician. He tuned organs and pianos and all that kind of stuff for neighborhood, anybody that wanted needed it done. Most of them, he did it for nothing.
How long was it before you and your wife had children?
13 months. A
that
year.
Was about what?
A year.
1918?
Huh?
About what year was that? About 1918 or 1920?
I guess somewhere in there.
Somewhere around there?
Do you remember how?
How old is Wayne? What year was Wayne born?
Who? Wayne?
Or Ruby? Who was the first
one? Ruby was the first one.
What year was she born?
Oh, well, she was born when we'd been married 11 months when Ruby was born. I have to sit and study a long time.
How long did you stay in Abilene?
Around Abilene, Texas? Well, I lived there a long time. Let's see. Harrison Gillum, Billy Gillums, Edgar Gillums. Oh, we lived around Abilene for several years. I don't remember how many.
And you pick cotton all the time you were there? Well, that's what. Did you have another job after that?
That was the only kind of a job that was available to any of us that lived in that community. That was where we got all of our, that when the family could get out and work, why, that was where we made our money, except my father and mother. Now they, he was working for the Cotton Growers Association, and sometimes they'd make $400 or $500 a week.
Do you remember where you went after Abilene? Where you moved to?
Yeah, I moved to Arizona. And I picked up and moved to Arizona because in Arizona, you didn't have to plant your cotton but about once every 5 years. You cut the stalks down with a stalk cutter pulled by two mules, and then you cultivated the stem to the cutting down, and it'd sprout out and make cotton from those sprouts. And so you didn't have to plant your cotton but about once every 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm. So that was sometime in the 1920s when you went to Arizona?
42, I think it was.
And you lived in Oklahoma before that.
Huh?
You lived in Oklahoma before that. When did you live in Oklahoma?
Well, I lived in Oklahoma when I was living in Arizona. I was just over there picking cotton. I lived there while I was picking cotton. That was after Wayne got big enough to pick cotton. He's the one that run off from home. We went to Phoenix, Arizona, to do some Christmas shopping one Christmas, and Wayne had $7 in money that he'd made a picking cotton, and he'd been wanting to go back to Texas all this time.
I was thinking back too about the 1920s. We went up to about 1920 where you lived in Wiley, Texas, and then later in Abilene. And I'm wondering where you were in the 1920s.
Well, I was in so many places, I didn't have time of keeping up with that.
Maybe Oklahoma, and you mentioned
what? Well, I worked for the government for... I started working for a government with a crew of 20, I think it was 21 or two men in the crew. We all went to working for the government. And all we had to do there on that, that was after we was grown. We had to register with the government. They took our fingerprints and everything, just like they would if you was going to jail. And we went and carried a town with us. That was the most interesting part of it.
You what?
We carried the town with us. We carried a complete town with us wherever we moved for 5.5 years.
And what exactly was your job?
Building migratory camps for migratory workers.
But this was in California.
Well, it was in California and Colorado and Mexico.
Uh-huh. That would have been in the 1930s. Then.
Yeah, that was up in the early 30s. Way back there.
Do you remember when you were working in some grocery stores, maybe as a partner in a grocery store?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we used to own one of the biggest grocery stores. It was in Carnegie, Oklahoma. the bankers there in Carnegie said we put more money in the bank in a week there than any other grocery store in the town. And that is where one of my brothers got married, Clarence. He was the one that died of typhoid fever. And one of my wife's family died of typhoid fever the same year.
That was in the 1930s?
Yeah, that was in the early
1930s.
Yeah.
Were you in Oklahoma then when the drought and the Dust Bowl came?
When the Dust Bowl came?
Yeah.
Yes, I guess I was. I've seen the sand piled up against fences and things where these are big tumbling weeds. Would roll up against the fence there, and then the sand would cover it up before it could blow away. And I've seen the sand there as deep as in top of them two lamps there, and all over the country, all over the road, and everywhere else. You couldn't go nowhere hardly.
Were you in farming then, or were you still in the grocery store business?
Well, then I was in the grocery store business. We bought a grocery store out, and the men that had a grocery store, well, we moved off of the farm into Carnegie and rented a nice two-bedroom home, I guess it was. And rented for $12 a month. And that was when the great cyclone come. You might have read about that. Come a cyclone through there. See, I'm skipping away over. Getting
That's okay. Tell me about the cyclone.
Well, I can remember it pretty good. Of course, I was married then, and I had some little children. It came, the storm hit within a mile of my house where I was living. And right straight across from there, from where I was living, a Nazarene preacher. That's where we got back into the Nazarene church. He was a Nazarene preacher, and he was building him a new house. And he had just finished his house up, and he had a crippled girl that had one leg that was about that much shorter than the other from the time that she was a baby. I don't know what caused her to have this short leg. But that was the only child this Nazarene preacher had. And we visited with him all the time.
What happened? You said he was building?
To the building?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had a back in the... Well, I'm skipping a little here and there again. There's something that came along before that. There, our neighborhood there where we was living, we all had storm cellars. We went in when it came up a storm. And that included me. And I had one of the nicest storm cellars you ever walked into. It was a great large one. You could put 20 people in it. and it was concreted all up and down in the side of this cellar. We had shelves built in there where you could set fruit, and we had a big peach orchard. It must have had 3 or 4 acres of ground in it, and we'd pick these peaches off and put them in fruit jars, they called them, and they were lined up all down in the cellar, but it left us plenty of room to have a full-size bed in there. And we'd just go down there, and we carried a chopping axe down there and a crowbar, so if the house blowed over on the cellar, we could chop our way out. We wouldn't be pinned in there. And we had all of that down in the cellar.
Did you ever have any thoughts or theories about why the dust storms were so bad?
Did I got what?
Did you ever think about why they had these bad dust storms in Oklahoma?
Well, sure we did. We thought about them, but thinking about them didn't move them. But it shows you how crazy our leaders were. Now, that was back in the beginning of the Franklin
Roosevelt,
yeah. Back in his days and times, why, he killed the cattle by the thousands, had them killed all over the country, and took them down in the, threw them in the, pitched them over in the big gullies and things, and had them cut open, you know, and poured coating all on them so nobody could eat them. As the President of the United States having that done. Now, you can call out a sensible man if you want to, but I say if there was a crazy man in there, he was one of them.
How about the crop programs? Do you remember hearing about the government paying people not to plant their crops? Or to plow under their crops?
Yeah, they'd give you so much to plow under, and if you didn't plow it under, well, they'd charge you for it just the same. And you'd plow your cotton and stuff under, and they'd have men going around surveying your fields and telling you what you could do. How much you could plow under and how much you didn't have to plow under, and that kind of stuff. And that was back in World War I.
How about tractors? At that time, do you remember very many people using tractors on their land?
Yeah. This Nazarene preacher that I was telling you about, he just built him a brand new house and bought him a three-bottom machine to pull his tractor to pull his plows, 3 12-inch plows. It pulled at one time. And there was a man right across the field from us that didn't believe in the cellars, going in a cellar in a storm. Well, this Nazarene preacher, he built him one anyhow, and he'd taken the tractors and pulled it across the field, further than hit them here across the street. without any thing being hooked to it, and hit in the ground, and it pulled it. Wind blew it hard enough to make it plow at least that far before it passed over it. And the man right across the field from that said he wasn't no such thing as storms that would tear a house up or anything. And he refused to go to build him a cellar or to go to one of the neighbors. And it blowed his house as one of the first ones. And it just rolled it like a baseball clear across that field. 3/4 of a mile or further. Just rolled it at one, and them inside of it. Inside of the house. They all come out alive. The wife is in there from falling from the ceiling, no, back down on the floor, and then when the house rolled over again, it broke both of her jaws, and she had to have them wired up. And I forget what it done to him, but it tore him up pretty bad. And Nazarene preacher, he had an old cellar there, but he hadn't been in it. He said it had been 7 years since he'd been in it, but he had a lot of farming tools, that like mowing machines and stuff like that, and cultivators and section harrows and so forth. And it blew them all over the, scattered them all over the fields. And the new piano that he bought, it blowed that out, and it blowed that thing for about, scattered it over about 4 or 5 miles. I think it was 5 miles to be exact, that we traced it before it tore it all to pieces, you know, and it just stuck the pieces in the ground then, just like you went along and planted them.
Did very many people blame these dust storms on Roosevelt and the government programs that he had to plow under the crops? I've heard some people say that because they plowed under the crops, there was a topsoil, a layer of dirt on the topsoil, and then when the winds came, it made it very bad. The topsoil blew up.
Well, I don't know about that. There was lots of little canyons and things all over that part of the country back there then. And little gullies and things, you know, where it had one little bunch of stuff there they called a crooked branch. And it's just as crooked as it's just like a snake crawling. It's just so crooked. And so when the dust storms came, well, I had to cover up the top of the fence post as high as my head. Just these big old weeds would blow up against it, and then they'd catch that sand and stuff.
Where were you working at that time?
Well, as I say, at that time, that's when we were doing. When we got a chance, that's where we done a lot of cotton picking and going from one state to the other, just picking cotton, but to get out of such as that.
It was during the Depression, so was it very hard economically? Did you have a tough time making ends meet?
You sure did. I used to have a big team of black mules, and I had two teams. One was a smaller team, and my largest team was they weighed 2,900 and some odd pounds with a rope tied around their neck. They was big mules, great big ones. And the other two wasn't quite as big.
You said you moved around from place to place.
Hauling stuff and filling up little gullies, it didn't amount to anything. the sidewalk out here in front of my house. I don't know whether they still show here yet or not. It was built by WPA workers. I never was on it but just a half a day in my life.
How many children did you have then, about the time of the dust storm, about 1935?
Well, I don't think I had but two.
What finally made you decide to leave?
Huh?
What made you decide to leave Oklahoma?
Well, what decided to leave Oklahoma? Well, that's an easy question answered. I worked all the year trying to raise a crop, and when I got through selling the crop that I had raised that year, I was living in a little two-bedroom house, and I had exactly, when I paid my debts up, I had exactly $51 in money to try to go through that cold winter. With that much money, it was impossible. It couldn't be done. No
so,
way.
So did you head for California right then?
I headed for Arizona right then. And that's where I went to Arizona and picked cotton. Went picking cotton. And I come out with, at the end of the cotton picking season, I come out with $800 and some odd and was crazy enough to move back and try it again. And it didn't work the second time. So I went out and went to building me a big trailer. And then my wife came out and said, "What are you fixing to do?" I said, "Mom, you've got to go stacking up some boxes and things." I said, "I'm going to California." And so she did, and we pulled that big trailer behind us. Was an old car, but it was a big car. It was a Cadillac with let's see, I forget how many horsepower it was, but oh, it was a big and straight one, you know.
How many things did you bring along in the trailer with you?
Just my
furniture,
family and one nephew.
How about your possessions? Did you bring your furniture and clothing and
clothes? No, no, I just
anything like that.
We brought our clothes and two beds, I believe it was. Two bed springs and mattresses.
Do you remember how long it took you to come from California? I mean, from Oklahoma to California? How many days on the road?
Yeah, I don't remember how many days. It was 10, 12 days on the road.
What did you do during that time at night for shelter? Did you just pull off the side of the road?
Pull off to the side of the road, and we had a brand new tent. I bought a brand new tent, and one of the other guys that was traveling with us, there was a wagon train of us. Well, they had one, and we had stretched up them tents, and we all lived together in them. And my sister that's living here in Visalia now, Alice, she was a baby then, little bitty baby.
So there was you and your wife and your two children?
Yeah.
About five or six children by then?
Well, she wasn't wait a minute now.
This would have been about 1937 or 1938.
Yes. John, my oldest brother, he's the one that carried Alice in the tent that night. They thought we had a mad dog in the tent, and he run, this dog that they was trying to get a shot at him to kill him. He was outside, but he was trying to get into the tent, and he did. Finally run into the tent where Alice was sleeping as a baby. This Alice is here now. See, I'm 7 or 8 years older than she is. And
okay, so there was you and your family, your wife and children, and then you said you kind of came like a wagon train, so in another car, it was your brother-in-law?
Oh, yeah, Uncle Will and Uncle Jack. Aunt Lanny and Uncle Jack and Aunt Dora and Uncle Bud. Not badly, Aunt Florence, and she's still alive.
Do you remember how many cars there were all together?
No, that first trip we made, there was quite a bunch of them.
Do you remember having any car trouble along the way?
Always having car trouble. They didn't build good cars them days. They hadn't learned enough about building cars. Let's see, I had an Oakland. You never did hear of them, did you? And I had a Stanley Steamer that had 12 cylinders to it. You ever see a car with 12 cylinders? It had 12 but you could buy gas. The best gas is made for 10 cents a gallon, so the gas didn't bother you. And then after we got we were moving out of the Black Land of Texas. That's where we was living, where the mud would get ball up on your wagon and get between the spokes and all the kids that was big enough to walk and carry a stick would have my stick punching mud out of the spokes of the wagon. Because they didn't install your team. And what did that Black Land stick in between the spokes on the wagon? And the time you drive a mile, why, your wagon wheels all fall and be sliding. And the team couldn't pull it and wade through that Black Land.
And we were just talking about your journey from Oklahoma to California. And I was wondering, since you had no money and that's the reason that you came to California, what did you do for food and your expenses, like say gasoline, on the way out here?
Oh, you could get all the gasoline that you wanted. And you can still get all the gasoline you want if you got the money to pay for it.
How much money did you have when you came here?
I had $800. Now, what they're doing work, went to cutting oranges around here. And it took me a year to find out that I wasn't as fond of oranges as I thought I was. I couldn't eat them all. And besides, they had them in the ricks here. When I first come here, it was piled up, ricks fell across the street here, but they was all covered up with croton oil where you couldn't eat them, and poured it all over them, so you couldn't steal them at night or anything.
And when you decided to come to California from Oklahoma, was there any reason why you decided to come to California?
Yes, there was.
Some other place instead of another state?
Yeah. I had a friend that had been to California, and he was telling me how beautiful it was. Well, it's clever than Annie's who it was. They come out here, and then High and Lower, they come out here, and a whole bunch of my kin folks come out here a year before I did, and they was telling me what a fine country it was and what a pretty country. It's just like going into heaven, they said. So I followed them out here. And I come over some of the awfulest roads you ever saw in your life. I come over the Globe Mountains. Did you ever see them? Mm-hmm. You been to the Globe Mountains? Well, you didn't see them years ago when there was no roads in there. Just,
yeah.
Well, they are still bad yet. Mm-hmm. But the first time we come over here with, here we just had two wheel brakes, and that was on the back. No front wheel brakes at all. And we come over them Globe Mountain dry. We'd gone down them hills so fast, my oldest boy was big enough that he could help me with the brakes, you know. I'd throw the brakes on a while and slow it down, and then he'd loosen up on it, and I'd take it time about, you know, going down them Globe Mountains and all. They was terrible, and the little road was narrow. And
do you remember coming over the Tehachapi Mountains?
Oh, yeah. I remember. I've been over them lots of times.
Do you remember what it looked like when you first came?
Yeah.
What the valley looked like?
Some of it was real pretty. Some of it wasn't real pretty. It's Tehachapi Mountains. They're pretty crooked, but since I've been out here, they got them where you can pass pretty good on them now. But the first time I come out here, there's lots of places that you'd have to stop or back up to pass the car that was coming the other way. I've only done that two or three times since I've been here, found the roads like that. But I got to the top of one of them here. That wasn't the Globe Mountains, that was part of the Tehachapi Mountains, I guess. It looked like it was 100 miles back down. It is Devil's Canyon. We come through that, you know. And you could just put your brakes on just for a second and turn them loose. Catch them again right quick because they going so fast you couldn't see where you were going anyway. But I got into them worse than that after I got out here. What's these here? High Sierra Mountains out here. When I first come out here, there wasn't no roads over them. And my wife, we used to go to the mountains every weekend. And she got to where she'd get seasick. And just bum up and be in the bed sometimes the highest 3 or 4 days after she got over the mountains.
Do you remember if California was what you expected it to be? Did you expect it to look like it does?
No, I didn't. I thought it was prettier than what it is. I thought it'd be prettier than what it really is. But it's, since I got used to it, why, these mountains don't, with the kind of cars you got now, these mountains don't mount to nothing.
Mm-hmm. Were you a little disappointed at first then?
Yes, I was. And if I had to, had to go back over them to get out of here, I'd have turned around and moved back. Went back to Texas where I belonged.
Where did you first go when you came here? Where did you first settle?
Tulare was the first place I came to when I come out here. They had a little little outfit there, a camping place where you could camp there and pick cotton, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I went there first. Then I got a job later on. The one I enjoyed most was the one that was making our own, taking our own town with us, just as complete as the last area is. I enjoyed that more than the other. And I got to be the foreman over all of the crew there, 21 of us.
When you were building the migrant camps then?
Yeah.
And that was kind of centered in Farmersville?
Farmersville.
At the Linnell camp?
Yeah, it's a Linnell camp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, yeah, I helped build that.
Could you tell me a little bit more about building the camps, about what the process was and how you went about it?
Well, we had the buildings that we was moving was 12 by 15. They were 15 feet long and 12 foot wide, and they was cut in two pieces. So they'd stack one on top of the other, and we'd haul them on these here wagons that we had, plus we carried a diesel engine to make the lights and to make the lights for the camp. Every camp then had a light, an electric light in it, you know. And then we had a bulldozer that we used to make our roads with, big diesel engine that pulled that, and we graded the streets just like they graded it by Sully, and it's fact that we've done a better job of it than they do on the street out here in front of me now when it rains. It gets so full out here, it takes it 3 or 4 days to run down. And the way we dreamed ours, we dreamed it where it all dreamed out in a day, wherever it was at. And we had a man that he kept the diesel engine that he was making all these lights and things with. He'd taken care of it himself. He kept it up in tip-top shape all the time. And then there'd be one family to each one of these buildings. Unless you had a big family, if you did, you could rent two or you could rent three of them if you wanted to. It cost you $1 a month. So it cost the migrant people $1 a month to get a building. and get one light in it. You can put one light in your building, and it'd light it up, be nothing over, just like one light would light this room. That now, you see, he's got this room lit up. Here, only, of course, this isn't a little bigger. That and burn your watts. The one we had, you could take 100 watt and light up one of them little buildings out there.
Do you remember where the camps were that you built?
No, I don't remember where all of them was. Some of them was in Utah, and some of them was in where Brigham Young's place is, you know. Some of them was over there. What's the name of that place? Where Brigham Young?
That's Salt Lake City. That's in Utah, too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember building some in Southern California down by Bakersfield or maybe in the Imperial?
Yeah, we built one right out there. You know where that big walk goes up over the...
Arvin?
Yeah. Yeah, we built two there, one out that one direction, one out another.
Another one would be at Shafter.
No.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how many you built all together? Was it quite a few?
Oh, yes, it's quite a few. We run it for, kept it going for about 5 years.
You worked for 5 years the whole time then?
I worked about 5.5 years with them.
Mm-hmm. Did you get very good pay for your job?
Well, we thought we was robbing the government. We was getting $12 a day back in them days. With that, you know, the crew was, men that was working there, you had to be fingerprinted and take a government test, you know, with your driving and all that stuff. I was fingerprinted, and so was all the other boys that worked there. But when you got to where you were going, if you didn't have enough men, the men you hired didn't have to do that. They didn't have to take fingerprints and things like that. We just hire them because they're just going to be working 2 or 3 days or maybe 5 or 6 days at a time, where we was working every day.
Do you remember how long it took you to put a camp together?
Well, when I first started, it took me a long time to put my part of it together, because I thought I had the worst job there was in the world. I was digging outdoor privies with a crowbar and a pick and shovel. And I thought that was about the toughest thing as far as I could get into, because some of this ground was just as hard as a rock. And then as I got promoted up, I finally got up to where it was that I was foaming over the job. And when I got up to that, it was a pleasure. I could sit in a chair. I could sit in a chair and put one of them up in a day. And then it'd take a week or two to put one up. It's so slow getting it up there. And one of the boys that worked with me is living in Bakersfield now. I believe it's Bakersfield he's living in. His name was White. No, it isn't right Bakersfield, it's right where Wayne lives, Napa. He lives in Napa.
Did you build all the common facilities at the camps too? I understand they had, say, a laundry room and a recreational room, sometimes a sewing room, common rooms where people could meet together to do things.
Did all that. Had washing machines and things like that, and dryers, and, you know, sure did. Had everything that you get and buy sell you. Mm-hmm. except that hardware store, and I don't guess we had any hardware store because they wasn't nothing. They'd need no way of hardware, and we didn't carry no extra lumber or nothing like that.
Did you have time off in between each project, say?
No. No, we just built, put one count down and moved to so many miles to another spot where they felt it was needed the worst, and dropped down there. We didn't put it up in rotation, if that's what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Where was your family during this 5.5 years?
Living here in the house. I'd come home about once every six or seven weeks.
Did your wife work then?
Yeah, she worked a while. She didn't work very long. She right down the street here where there's a ice house now. She worked down there at a grocery store. For a while. How long did she work down there?
Not very long.
I know she did not work very long, but she worked down there a while.
Did you just work 5 days a week, or did they have you working longer hours?
Well, we could work as long hours as we wanted to. No, we worked just about like we would out here whenever we thought we'd put in about 8 or 9 hours a day. Why, unless we was just finishing up a job or something, by then time didn't mean nothing to us. We was getting paid by the day by the government to build these. It's called the Department of Agriculture, is what they called it.
Well, since you didn't have your family around, what did you do in your spare time in the evenings and on weekends when you weren't working?
Went to a motion picture show or something to the closest town around.
Was it pretty lonely? Did you miss your family then?
Oh, of course I did. I was the only guy in the bunch, in my bunch, at least. I was the only guy in the bunch, I guess. No, there was one other, me and one other guy was in the bunch that we tried to save our money. The others didn't care. They just spent it like it's water. And half of them would leave home with not enough money to run them till they got back. I never did have to send back after any extra money. I always made mine last me till I did get back.
You said you made about $12 a day.
Yeah.
That was doing pretty well.
Well, it was when the outsiders was only getting about $3 a day. Or cutting oranges by the box, and of course, some of them could beat that, cutting oranges. But there wasn't very many of them. Now, my boy, Bruce, the one that's ahead of all of this Beacon stuff here, he was one of the best orange cutters. There wasn't him and the Mexican boy. They never did, I don't guess they ever did make out which one of them was best. But they were the two fastest orange cutters there was in the valley.
So some of your children worked in the crops then? Was that just sort of for extra money, maybe after school or on weekends?
No, if you were making $12, $14 a day of cutting oranges in, you were making good money. Bruce, the one that's over all of these Beacon stations now, Bruce, he was, him and the Mexican boy, was the two fastest cutters there was in the valley. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'd be taken off to a small orchard by themselves, where they could just have a whole orchard by themselves.
Did he complete high school?
No, I don't think he ever did complete high school. And the one of my boys that did at one time have the best education of any of the others was the one they called John. He went higher in the school than any of the others. He got up in to where he's pretty good in figures. And he could just about figure anything. Now I don't know, and then now he's a security guard now. He's still working, but he also worked at a radiator shop.
At that time, did the rest of your children complete high school? One did?
No, not that I know of.
Aretha did.
Oh, yeah, Aretha did.
You said Bruce worked cutting oranges. Did the rest of your kids also work in the fields then? Or did
yeah.
they have other jobs?
Well, some of them did. See, my children's been scattered ever since they got grown. Most of them lived up around, I guess up around where Bruce lives, where Wayne and Lola lives.
So at this time, some of your children had already left home.
Oh, yeah.
On their own. Do you remember how many children your wife still had at home when you were working on this camp?
Well, there was some of them were working with me on building these camps.
Some of your children?
Yeah, when the war broke out and they had to go to war.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they, Wayne and Glenn and John. And they of course, they was all called into the army. But Jay and the only one that went through the army together was J.C. and Bruce, the ones who were the Beacon outfit here. They went clear through the war, and they were there 30-some-odd months, each one of them the same amount of time, and both of them came out the same as a sergeant in the Army, with the same rating as any of the other soldiers had. And that, in John's part, he took the rough end of the bargain, what you call it. Bruce, he took the cooking job. He started out as a cook for the Army, and he was in the Air Force, and the others was in the regular, just a regular old get out there and shoot and kill them or get killed. And Bruce, he was on seven different planets. On his end of it, the one that was the cook, and the other one, he was just in the regular armory.
I want to go back just a little bit. Before you got the job building the migrant labor camps, I think you said you worked in some cotton fields when you first came to California.
Yeah, picking cotton.
Do you remember how long that was before you got the job in building the migrant camps?
Oh, that was... No, I don't remember how long it was. It was long enough that we had to be fingerprinted, and they're all just like it would if you'd gone in there.
No, I mean, when you came out here, you didn't immediately get the job building the labor camps. You had to do something else to support your family before you got that job.
Well, before we got that job,
that was picking cotton.
Picking cotton, yeah.
Was that in this area, right around here?
Yes, it was in this area and around Tulare, and just anywhere we could find good cotton field.
You had to follow the crops a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it come out a little different. I'll try to cut back a little bit here. And we had a woman that lived right here next to me. And her husband. They had their children was born right here next to my house. It was where this here camp is here, this labor camp or this camp now. There was a woman lived there, and her kids, her grandkids, and so on. They all lived there before they tore that down and built this camp that they're living in here now was side of me here. So she owned her place and I owned mine. And she got all of her children moved and had it on my mind when I started talking to you.
This is session 2 with Robert Dinwiddie, Friday, February 20th, 1981, at 10:15 a.m. Okay, first I wanted to go back a little bit. You were telling me the other day about when you first came to California, you worked in the cotton fields.
Yeah, picking cotton.
Right, to make a living. I wondered if you could tell me a little bit more about that, about how long you did it and the places you went to pick cotton.
Well, I could never in the wide world tell you the places I went. I went all over the country. Me and a girl that's a nurse in a hospital now, and she lived next door to me. That was when... all of this was in housing and stuff, you know, instead of apartments and things like that. It's just John and Susie lives here, and Bill and Mary lives next door to them, and so on like that, you know. And when I went to breaking wild mules when I was a young man. When I was still a young man, but that don't correspond to what you was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what.
Yeah. Well, I was just wondering if you could tell me about working in the fields. Perhaps you remember how much you were paid.
Oh, I can remember part of that, but most of it was. Yeah, there.
We were just talking about how much you were paid for working in the cotton fields.
Well, after I left Texas and come to this country, well, we was paid on an average of from 75 cents to $1.00 for picking cotton. In some places, maybe this farm would be paying $1, another they'd be paying 6 bits, 75 cents, you know. And each one of them trying to get cotton pickers, you know, getting enough cotton pickers to pick their cotton. So some farmers would pay a little more than the others to try to get more pickers over in their field, see.
Was it difficult to find a job picking cotton?
No, not a bit in the world. You can just go out here anywhere and find a job. The only thing it hindered occasionally, there'd be a bunch of go on a strike, you know, for higher wages. They hear that the smith over here on this next farm is paying maybe $1 a hundred instead of 75, or 75 instead of 50, and that would cause the farmers to compete against one another to get the picking done, see. And then there'd be strikers coming, going maybe walking your fence for a while out in the road where, you know, they weren't allowed to come in this man's field. He wouldn't let them come in the field. He's probably guarding the field with a shotgun or something to keep the people that was trying to get the pickers out of this field to strike there and go to this other field that was paying just a little more money and things like that.
Were you ever involved in any of the strikes?
Never was. When I went out to pick cotton for a man, I didn't quit him for nothing, as long as he needed me. Me and my little bunch, I think there was four of us that picked. And we were all good cotton pickers. I had one son, he's the one that's working for the Beacon Oil Company now. Why, he could pick 600 pounds of cotton a day by 2 or 3 o'clock, and he'd quit for the rest of the day. In the same way of cutting oranges, he could cut oranges. Him and the Mexican boy were the fastest orange cutters there was in the country. They never was beat.
Did you know anyone who was involved in the strikes? Any friends or acquaintances that went on?
Oh, yeah, but most of them dead that I used to know, and I don't know whether any of them's alive or not.
Do you remember?
That looked like that car looked like his car drive just stopped and then started on again. I don't know whether it is or not.
Do you remember if there was any violence?
Oh, yes, there was plenty of violence. There was no one that I know of, not in the part of the country where I picked or worked. There was no one of them ever got killed or anything like that. But they had the people, the owners of the ground or the owners of the cotton field. Well, they'd go around the inside of their fence, you know, where they wouldn't be out in the public road, or where they was protected by their own property. But they'd carry their guns just in case anybody tried to shoot them. And things like that went on. But I never was in any of them. I was always a peaceful man, and I believed in if I hired out to you to do a job for you, I thought my place was on your property where I hired out to work.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that you were paid enough for the job you did?
Well, I was paid a lot whatever my neighbors and them was getting. Maybe say it'd be 5 or 10 cents. 100 difference in it, but it wouldn't be enough to justify me to quit that bunch and go over to pick cotton for the Joneses or something.
Were you able to support your family on them?
Oh, yes. You bet your life. You were picking 600 pounds a day, you know. Anybody could pick 500 and 600 pounds of cotton a day, and I could average that every day. I could make enough money picking cotton to buy all of our winter clothes. our shoes, and our school kids that was in school got by their school clothes, and sometimes during the best part of the picking season, well, we'd take the children out of school to let them. There was no reason why you couldn't. Everybody else did. And let the children come out and help. And they were good cotton pickers, too. Mm-hmm. And then I got a job working for the government.
When you were still in the fields, could you tell me what kind of a home you lived in? What your house was like, whether you rented or you lived on the ranch that you were picking at the time, or what you did for a home?
Well, this one here was one of them, and then I had another one that rented out here. Well, I can't tell you where it is. It's out in the where there's some small houses, you know.
Was that the first home you had when you came to California? The first place you lived?
The first place I lived when I came to California, I didn't own it. It was a place that I was renting. I can't even remember who I was renting it from now.
Do you remember what it looked like, how large it was, how many rooms it had?
Well, it only had about 3 at the most. Mm-hmm. And because I had some children, and they had to have beds too, you know. Of course, I had 2 girls, Aretha and Ruthie. And they didn't, neither one of them picked very much cotton, as I remember.
Did the house have hot water?
Oh, yeah. You know, we had hot water. Sometimes if it wasn't too old. Now, I used to have, I just got a 25-gallon heater in this house, but it furnishes plenty of water. And I got a 25-gallon one in this little outhouse here.
Did the house you were first living in have an indoor toilet?
Well, the first house that I ever had didn't have an indoor toilet. It had an outdoor toilet, and it was about as far as from here to across the street. From the house, you had to walk to get to it. And it was just a hole dug down in the ground. And when that got filled up, why, they just pulled a little building up, you know, get a crowbar or something and prise it up from the ground, pick it up and carry it over to another spot so far away that they'd be no orders or anything from the old one, and then we'd fill the old one up. So there would be no stink from that.
Mm-hmm. You shared that with other people who lived around you then?
No, I didn't share it with nobody else then, because there's enough of my children. Mm-hmm. See, I had 2 girls, and I had 4 or 5 boys. I'd have to stop and count them. But all my boys had to go to war when war broke out.
Well, could you tell me how your life was compared with other Okies that were working in the field? Were you about average?
Yes. There were some that had larger families than I did. And there were some, I think, that had smaller families. And the man that lived right next door to me, him and I were real good friends. And he got a job working he got a job of working at one of the big school, Crookshank schools here in town.
It sounds like you might have had a little bit more money than some of the other workers, because you were talking about buying your children new winter clothes.
Oh, that was after I went to doing carpenter work.
Well, how about when you were working in the fields? Was there any money left over after you paid for your food and the essentials?
Well, we made enough to live on, that's all. We're just the average cotton farmers or pickers and things like that, just like the neighbors around you, all growed up together and lived close together.
Was it difficult making ends meet?
No. I never did have no trouble with that.
How about when you started working for the government building the camps? Did you make some more money then and were things a little bit
easier? Oh, yes. I made about 4 or 5 times as much.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I made some good money then. And,
do you remember what we would call ditch camps, where people would park alongside the road, or if they didn't have a car, just pitch a tent alongside the road, and they would live there indefinitely, not just an overnight thing, but they would actually build camps out of tents and shacks and live beside the road? Do you remember seeing anything like that?
Yes, I do. I remember seeing some things like that. I was in the grocery business. I had a grocery store and was selling groceries. And the little building's still sitting right out here where you can see it. And I had a grocery store in there, and I had it stacked with groceries from the floor to the ceiling, which was 8 foot high,
But do you remember seeing these camps of people? This would be in the late 30s, probably before you had your store. About the time you were working in the fields, and then later on building the government camps.
Well, I forgot so much of that because I've tried to forget it. That I can't remember much about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's okay. Why don't we get back to your work when you were in the fields? I was wondering how you knew where to find work. Was this just a word of mouth thing, or did people send out flyers that told where the work was? How did you know exactly where to go to find work in the field?
Oh, they had little ads in the paper, you know. The newspaper cost you $1 a year. And they'd put ads in there, or want ads, they called them.
Uh-huh.
And they'd tell you where the this cotton field was, how to get there. And all of us, back in them days after I come to California, especially, why, there was places why they all had their own way of getting there with the cars. But back in Texas, if you wanted to go way back yonder, why, we went on horseback or in a cart or in a buggy, or in a surrey.
Well, I was just wondering about when you were out here in California. Did you ever go very far beyond this area to follow the crops? Did you go north?
Oh, yes, sure.
Or south?
Sure.
You away from home so that you would have to stay someplace else overnight? Where you couldn't travel home at night?
Yes, when we was doing that, why, there was 21 people of us.
No, I meant the field work. When you were picking cotton, did you pick cotton very far away from this area? Or was it usually just right around here?
Well, there was a farm right here close where we picked cotton, and it belonged to the government. The land did. They had the 500 acre field, and that's what they was picking, raising cotton, and you pick cotton there for the government. And they furnished you a house to live in for $8 a month, a two bedroom home.
Did you live there?
Oh, yes, I did. I lived there till I went to work for the government, and when I went to work for the government, they made me move out. Said I couldn't work for the government and live in a government house. Does that sound sensible?
Well, when you lived on this government land in the house and you picked cotton for the government, did you get better pay than when you picked cotton for an independent farmer?
Yeah, we were supposed to get about a nickel a pound, I think, more.
Mm-hmm.
And the other.
Do you remember very much about the way the growers or farmers treated you and the farm workers in general, whether they treated you very well or?
Oh, yes, they treated us very well. There was no trouble there.
Do you remember ever hearing about anyone being cheated by the farmers or being discriminated against?
Well, this little building right here next to me, at that time, I guess, why, I figured their cotton and everything for them, I guess, on my adding machine. I had an adding machine that went with my store building when I moved in here, when I bought this place here, I mean, and that was a way back there. I've owned this place now for 50 years, and that was a little bit before your time.
I mean, when you were picking the cotton, I've heard that sometimes when the workers would bring their sacks of cotton up to the scales to be weighed, there were some farmers who were dishonest and would try to cheat the workers out of their pay.
Well,
were you hearing anything like that?
No, well, I never had them nobody do me that way. I've heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could actually see a live picture of the people and how things was run back in those days, well, you'd see how that was easy done.
What do you mean?
Well, you weighed your cotton on a pair of scales about that long.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the scales was a little larger than the other. Some of them would some of them weigh up to 200 pounds, and some of them wouldn't weigh that much. And they could put a little extra lead in the bottom of the big pea that weighed it. It was a thing that hung down about that fur, and it was loaded with lead at the bottom to make a scale balance at a certain weight. In other words, it'd take maybe 10 pounds to balance the scale where you could hang the pea. They called that a pea. If you hung on that for your weight, and that the pea could be loaded to where it would weigh heavier, or it could be some of it dug out to where it would weigh lighter. Now, there was some that did cheat that away. But you would probably work your man almost all before you'd ever find out that he did have it that way. It'd be so little you wouldn't notice it. But a pound, yeah, and a pound there, just like we go in here, you hear them, so, some of your grocers and stuff is up so many cents. And maybe tomorrow they'll be down a little. Some of the meat you buy might be a little cheaper in one store than it is in another, even now, you know.
Did they pay you every day?
Oh, no. Well, some of them did. Some of them paid you at the scales every day when you weighed. But not all of them didn't do that. And some of them just paid you once a week.
Mm-hmm. So they pay you cash? I've heard some people that were given tickets or tokens, and they were only allowed to use these at certain stores.
Well, they had the tokens, and then we had one store, I believe it was, I don't think that was in California, though. I think that was over in Arizona. See, we picked up from one state, and you had to work everywhere to make a living with cheap wages like that. But your prices that you paid for your sack of flour. Now, I had this little grocery store out here. I could sell you 48-pound sack of flour. That was called, they called it 50, but it was 48 pounds. And you could buy that 48 pounds of flour. You could buy it for 60-some-odd cents. Can you picture that? Mm-hmm. And all that kind of stuff. And then before I came from Texas, I learned to do carpenter work when I was living in Texas. I got in with a carpenter, and I went to doing carpenter work in my spare time. And when I went to doing carpenter work, of course, I made more money doing carpenter work than I could picking cotton or anything else back in them days.
Did you try to get work as a carpenter out here in California?
I didn't try, I did. I built this one you're sitting in.
Were the wages much better?
Well, these, of course, I built them out of my own wages. Oh, yes, the wages were better because when I first started in, well, we carried a town with us. We carried a town with us as complete as the Visalia is, just as complete in every respect as the city of Visalia is. There was 21 men of us.
When you told me about building those camps last time, you mentioned that you were paid $12 a day.
That was from the government.
From the government, and you felt that you were almost robbing the government. That's what you said. I wondered, wasn't the work very hard? Why did you feel that you were robbing the government?
I just said that compared to what I've been getting.
Okay, but did you feel the work you were doing was worth $12 a day?
Yes, I did. It was hard work. Building a house is hard work. Mm-hmm. If you don't think it is, just try to look at the pieces that goes in it. And then there's something between it and the other wall over there.
Did all of the fellows that worked with you work very hard, too?
Sure, they did. We all worked just alike, just the same. I used to have my picture taken of doing work over when I was around here, and I can still show you the standpipe and everything. Where we got our water, we had a water system just like they got here in Visalia. And big overhead. You've surely seen these around Visalia here. Haven't you? Mm-hmm. Or have you worked much around here?
Not much.
Some of these days, maybe some of these days I might have to get you to drive me around in your car. Now I can show you some of the things that I did. It's still there to prove that I've not misrepresented anything to you.
Now, after you built these camps, that ended in about, say, 1943 or so, 1944?
Well, it went on for 5.5 years.
Mm-hmm. What did you do after that? Was that when you went into the carpentry work?
No, when I went into the carpentry work for myself was after I moved in here, in this house here, after I finished building this house.
I had done
building back in Texas even when I was a young.
What did you do for a living after your job with the government ended?
Well, we had your first chop cotton, if you're raising cotton. Them days you did, you don't now. But them days you'd plant you'd plant 50 acres field of cotton.
You were doing cotton after you worked for the government, after World War II? You went back to doing cotton, is that what you mean? Or did you go into something else? I'm talking about after you finished building the government camps. This would be sometime during World War II, maybe the end of World War II.
I was in the restaurant business here in Visalia. Did I tell you about that?
No.
Oh, yes, I used to run a big restaurant here. I run it by myself for a while, and it got so big I couldn't handle it, and I went to Har and help on this restaurant. And it used to be right down here where the building's still there. Right down Main Street here.
How long did you do that?
We was in that 2 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And then did you go into the grocery business? Is that when you had your grocery store?
No, I had the grocery store first. And that's when I went out of the grocery business here. And I'd never been in the restaurant business, but I went in, bought into a restaurant, and then I sold a half interest in it to my brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember when World War II came?
Huh?
When World War II came, do you remember if that changed things very much for you and your family?
Oh, sure it did. World War II, it just tore everything up. I had 4 boys at one time in the Army. And, let's see, John and Bruce and Wayne. Glenn. Glenn had ulcered stomach, and he was exempt from the Army. They turned him down because of his ulcered stomach he had, and the same with Wayne. And Wayne, he couldn't make the 20-mile walks. He couldn't. I don't know, there was something that caused him to black out, and they'd have to always bring him in on a stretcher. And so he got out of the Army. didn't have to go to the army and fight. But he went there a little. But John and Bruce, they were both in the army. Bruce was in the aeronautics. Uh-huh. And J.C. was in the infantry. And the infantry was the one that got the worst of the war, you know, and they were phased.
Hey, we were just talking about World War II and your sons that were involved in the war. I wondered if the war changed things very much for you, yourself, while you were here.
You wonder if the...
If it changed things much for you, for your life and your family that was still here in the
United States. Well, I think the war, when the war hits, I think it changed the life of everybody. The ones that's in the war and the ones that's not in it. I don't think they come back the same people that they were when they left. Of course it changed. When you have to lay in a foxhole, maybe for 12 hours without any rations to eat or anything, with a straw sticking up through the foxhole where you're at, through the water, just enough to keep from, that you can get a little water to drink through that little straw. Was just the end of it, sticking up where it can't be seen by another soldier walking by or anything on the enemy's side. And then get cut off into a small division with maybe 15 or 20 men from your whole troop and stay that away for maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks before you can ever find your way back to your own division.
Well, how about for you here at home? Because the Depression ended and the war started, did things get better for you economically? Did you find you had more money?
No, not on the account of the war. It was on the account of the jobs that we had to make for people that didn't have nothing. It would have had no place to sit, not even a tent or anything else to have lived under. If it hadn't been for the Department of Agriculture, is what they called the division that I worked with.
Well, these people who had no place to live, that had little money or no money and lived in tents or wherever they could live, did you ever wonder why you were able to get a job, say, picking cotton in the fields and later for the government, and why these other people didn't seem to be able to find work?
No, I can't tell you. Only I just figured that I happened to be one among the luckiest, mm-hmm. lucky ones, and got a better job than they did.
And do you think they tried as hard as you did to find work?
Well, perhaps they did, but maybe they were handicapped to start with. Now, one of the families that I really appreciated so very, very much. He was sent out to die from his state. I forgot what state he was from, but he had a boy and one, two, three girls. He had four or five children. And he, the papa, he got sick in the state wherever it was he was living, and they told him to move west. He was from some eastern state, and they told him to move. If he didn't move west, he wouldn't live 6 months. And so he moved out, and I was with this bunch of men that was putting up these camps and things for the migrant people. And they rented one of you could rent them for $1, a platform they called it. And the platform was cut in half. And you stacked them on top of one another when you was hauling them till they was 13 feet and a half tall. Up here, and then when you got to the campground, was land that they had rented from some farmer. And you'd rent that piece of ground, and he'd be laid off there, and you'd fill that spot that you had rented, that the government had rented.
Do you remember if very many of these migrants who had difficulty finding jobs and had no money, do you remember if very many of them took government aid, what we would call now welfare?
Yes, I remember when a lot of them did that. They called it WPA then. You remember that?
I've read about it.
These sidewalks right here in front of my house was laid back then, them days. But I wasn't living here then. The sidewalks was here.
Did you ever have to take some government aid?
I took... they give away beans and potatoes and stuff like that. I took one, if I remember correctly, half of a well, I can't tell you how to say it. I don't know how to say it.
Of a check?
I took one commodity. That's what I'm trying to say. I thought I was going to have to get on it, and I took one slice of it, as you call it.
Uh-huh. Just one time, then?
Just one time. Mm-hmm. That was all I ever took. I got off of it and got a job and went to work.
But you say there were a lot of Okies who did take government aid and
oh, yeah. Well, we still got them to take food.
Many more times than once. Some of the people who lived here in California thought that people came from Oklahoma and Texas just to get the commodities and the check from the WPA. Do you think that perhaps there were some?
No, there wasn't some come here to purpose to get that. Not any that I know of that come here a purpose to get that. Who'd want to come and get something like that? A purpose. Could you imagine anybody wanting to take something like that if they didn't have to? I couldn't. I can't imagine anyone.
You think that most of the people tried very hard to find jobs and only took it when it was absolutely necessary then?
Well, I know a few that they said didn't. And I know a few that, I know a whole lot that did. But that depends a whole lot on how it happens. Now, I got to be where I was the head man in this here government project. I mean, I was one of the guys that was at the head of the party, head of the deal. When we came here, we had the standpipe still shows here by Visalia still today. By the first thing we done, we organized the migrant people. 1,200 and some odd of us here moved here about at the same time. And some of us had tents and some didn't even have nothing. I happened to have a brand new tent. And that was when my little girl, Ruthie, that was when she was born. I was living on the farm when she was born, and you couldn't get a job. There was no jobs for nobody to have, and you had to live somewhere. So I got a job and went to digging outdoor privies.
Right. With the government.
Yeah, I told you that a while ago, didn't I?
Yeah. Do you remember if any of the local people who were native Californians or had lived in California a long time had any hostility towards the Okies that came in as farm workers?
Oh, yes. There was people all around here. It was that. Now, I thought of a little more stuff that I didn't tell you the other day. Now, you could get sage. Mm-hmm. You could get all the sage you wanted free of charge because you could cut it down yourself out in the wilderness when I first came here.
Do you remember any incidents where the townspeople had said derogatory things, bad things about the Okies, or where Okies had gone in, say, to stores or churches or something like that and were not received very well?
Well, if you want to go back, clear back to the Steenbeck's outfit, you've read many books on it, I guess, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
If you go clear back to that, yes, we had hostility.
Do you remember anything happening to you?
No, nobody ever bothered me. Me and my family, we were never bothered because we didn't bother nobody else.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember things that were said about the Okies?
Well, but we got to where they call them Okie and Arkie, as people from Arkansas,
uh-huh.
And just name them after the state that they came from, you know, and all that. I seen some of that here just a while back on television. I don't know how to try to outline it to you. That's my trouble.
Well, did very many people have these negative feelings about Okies? Was this a common thing?
Oh, yeah, everybody, all of the people that was out of work and couldn't get no jobs. And then they got sending in, bringing in Mexican people from Mexico. and giving them jobs because none of them didn't have no work. And the government got to doing that, you know, bringing them in and letting the farmers use them. And that's how come us to get so many Okies, or Mexican people, in this country. The Mexicans wasn't bothering nobody until after that. Then they got to bringing them in here. And, but that wasn't, you were talking about just in this neighborhood.
Do you remember any violence associated with the farm workers as far as, let's say, the local townspeople being upset that the Okies had come and taken work in the fields and therefore done them out of jobs? Do you remember any fights or arguments, that sort of thing?
I remember some of them having fights. I never did have any, but I remember some that did have fights, and they would call the law from Visalia out to sometimes break them up. And the Visalia laws, they couldn't come in one of those camps and break it up. They wasn't allowed to. They didn't have nothing to do with it. That was government work. As for the government to take care of it, they have to select their own protection. Yeah, I've seen them fight like dogs and just roll and tumble, fighting one another. But I never did have to get in no fight with them.
Did you ever resent it, or did it ever upset you that people would call you?
No, ma'am, I don't. I have trained myself all my life to mind my own business and not try to run another fellow's business. I still don't understand. I can't understand your interest, that's what I mean. That you want to know all of this, and I just wonder, you told me something you was interested in it about it, but I don't remember what it was even now.
Well, when you were first here in California,
were you just talking about right here in California, in the neighborhood there?
Right, in here. When you first moved here, did you make friends right away that were in the same position you were in? Did you feel pretty comfortable here?
Well, sure I did. Sure. I lived in a little white house right out. This is south, and that's east. I think it's east of me, back east of me. I think the little house out there where I used to live. And then we got a job of working with this migratory construction stuff that I told you about.
We were talking last time a little bit about the Steinbeck and the Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah.
And I asked you if you had read the book or
something. You know, yeah, I've read the book, and I've been to the
the movie?
I've lived in the same camp with them, is what I'm trying to say.
With whom?
The Steinbecks.
When was that?
Well, that's when I first come out here and didn't have no place and was picking cotton around. Well, we had to move into a camp where they were at. They didn't bother me because I didn't bother them, but they did have lots of fist fights and things like that out there. I don't remember if anybody, I can't remember if anybody ever got killed in any of the deals.
Do you remember very much about the Grapes of Wrath, whether you think that was an accurate representation of the Okies and their experience?
Well, it was, I say it was a mixed bunch of people from different states and things.
Do you think that the picture that Steinbeck painted of the Okies was the way it really was? Do you think his book was true?
Yes, I do. I think his book was very true. I don't think he muddled up a bit of it. I think it was every word just as true as could be.
How about the way people spoke, the violent and sometimes bad language they used? Do you think they spoke that way?
No, they're worse now than they was then. Did you know they say things on the television here in public, or you can hear it on public, or in the, if they're speaking man to man, well, you can hear it. They'll say things now that they wouldn't have said back then.
How about the way Steinbeck, he particularly made the Jode family look very crude and ignorant? And
well, most all of them was kind of crude and ignorant as far as education is concerned, because we didn't have no school teachers then. You couldn't hardly find a school teacher that knowed any more than you did.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they were as crude as Steinbeck said they were, though? He had them digging through garbage cans and burying people just anywhere they died. And
well, now that I think was all, I think that was hearsay. I've been in their camps, and I never seen them kill nobody, and I never seen them bury nobody, or nothing like that. I think that was just propaganda that they're putting out. That the Californians and them that had always already living out here had done established themselves in good homes or in homes anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that they didn't have to do that.
Do you think that most people got their idea of what Okies were like from Steinbeck's book?
Well, I grew up in Texas and Oklahoma, and I found that the people out there is now and was then just as nice of people as they was on the globe, on the face of the earth. Just as nice and just as...
But the Grapes of Wrath tended to give the Okies a bad name.
They did give them a bad name. They didn't just intend to. They did give them a bad name. Now, there were some rough people that was in that bunch of people, and they didn't respect nothing and nobody. Well, they don't now. Even over the telephone, well, they'll talk to you lots of times. I pick up the telephone sometimes from somebody that happens to be called in for something or about something, or to ask you a question or something, and use cuss words and things like that over the telephone right this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think they should do it. But
well, when Steinbeck's book came out in about 1939, and it was very widely read, and then the movie.
Well, they fudged on that a lot. They made it worse than what it really was, and made it seem worse. But they was ready to fight. I've seen policemen from Visalia here come out to the the camps to.
Did that affect you very much? His book did, because more people knew about Okies and had read the book. Did that affect your life? Perhaps did people say, "Oh, I've heard about you Okies. I've read this book and I."
No, I've probably heard them. I've probably heard them say that. I don't. There's nobody never bothered me, and I've never bothered nobody. So I don't try to take up the other fellow's habits.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised by parents that didn't believe in that. They belonged to the church. They belonged to the Sunday school. When I was a boy, I was about I was 12 years old, I believe. We was going to Sunday school. When I rode to Sunday school, that was before cars or anything. My dad had one of the biggest team of mules there was in the community. And we was on the road to Sunday school and church. And we passed a ballpark where us boys, just kids, you know, 10, 12 years old, 13, 14 years old, our ballpark where we was playing ball, and it was on a Sunday. And I started getting up in the wagon, and Dad said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going out here to play ball my ball team is out here." And he said, "You sit back down there. You're going to Sunday school." I said, "Dad, that's the boys that I play with all the time." And I said, "We're going out there to play so-and-so, whatever team it was, name of it." And I said that you could hear them all hollering, and they was coming towards the wagon, motioning for me to come on and get in the game, you know. And he made me sit back down, and he made me go to Sunday school like we'd started.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we get back to when you were in California. Have things changed for you very much since the Depression? Do you feel that your life is any better, or it has been a lot better than it was?
Well, of course it's been better.
Do you think it's been better than it would have been had you stayed in Oklahoma?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I've got a brother, the only one that I've got to live in, lives in Oklahoma.
Are you glad that you came to California?
Well, sure I'm glad I came to California, because this country is so much warmer. You can get through the winter without having to keep a fire every morning. We used to do it when I first built this house here. As I remember, I don't remember us ever thinking about lighting the this time of year, of having to light a winter stove to keep warm.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever consider going back to Oklahoma?
No. No, not till here lately. Here lately, I've decided that should I ever move away from here, I might go back there, but it'd be, I guess, due to my brother, if I did, because he never moved away from Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.